Well, hello, advanced listeners. Welcome back during the month of February, and we are just moving right along in this month. We're already in February 22nd and the 23rd. We're in our education article for the month of February. And we have an interesting topic for you this month. We are talking about ADHD. That is short for Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder. And I think for many teachers, this is something that they need to deal with in the classroom. And I think it was just great to have an article for our teachers out there to be able to discuss this topic and see what is happening to address it. And I have some great panelists on the show with me today. So on my left I have...
David.
Hi, David. How are you?
Hello, I'm very good.
Good. It's great to have you here on the show today. And to my right I have...
This is Pauline. Really excited to get to be here for this article today. I'm really interested in this topic.
Good. Yeah, I think we have a lot to share with our listeners and just a lot to discuss, right? Now, are you familiar with ADHD, Pauline?
Yes, I am. I worked in a school for troubled youth, and some of those youth struggled with ADHD, so that was definitely something we were aware of in our classrooms, and always trying to think of creative ways to respond to that and give our kiddos extra opportunities to be active and find ways to focus at the same time on learning. So it's definitely something I have come across in my life.
Great. So we're going to have some hands-on and some experience that I'm sure you can share with our listeners today. So that'll be great. And David, how about you?
Well, not so much. I haven't met that many or come close to or be friends with at all, actually. But yeah, I mean, this looks like a very interesting topic.
Right. And I think it's very practical for our teachers out there and even for our students to understand more about ADHD. I know for myself, I had one person in my family that had ADHD, and so growing up, it was a topic in our household, and I think that was really good to be aware of it, just my whole life being aware of it, so that when, as a teacher myself, I was encountering students that may be struggling with ADHD, it really helped me to empathize with them and understand them a bit more. So we're hoping that this article will help our teachers and our students. Deck in our article says this commonly diagnosed disorder creates a struggle for teachers and students. Would you agree with that, Pauline, that it creates a struggle for teachers and students?
Definitely, especially in your classrooms that are really heavy on really formal study, that's a lot of just lecture and writing and papers, when there's not, you know, it is the struggle for teachers to not see ADHD students as problem students because they do have so much more energy and it's hard for them to concentrate, and that makes the teacher's job a little more difficult. And well, I think they have a lot of beautiful things to bring to life into the classroom. It also is definitely a challenge for teachers.
Right. So there's that challenge of balancing the academic side that is required in education to also the life, like you said, that they bring to the classroom, right? The passion that they can bring. Well, let's get into our first reading today. And so, listeners, you can turn in your advanced magazine to page 36 or on your electronic device. And we're going to begin our first reading in column one.
ADHD in the classroom. This commonly diagnosed disorder creates a struggle for teachers and students. Hudson Dunn has always been an active boy. His daycare teachers called him demanding and independent. In preschool, he preferred singing and daydreaming to learning the ABCs. By the time he was in kindergarten, he often came home crying. It created an environment in the classroom where he was labeled a bad kid, said his mom, Janine Dunn. Hudson has Attention Deficit Hyperactivity Disorder, or ADHD, one of the most commonly diagnosed mental health disorders in children. The Centers for Disease Control, CDC, estimates 11% of American kids have ADHD.
Well, listeners, if you're joining us, we are looking at our education article for the month of February, and we are looking at ADHD in the classroom and how it can be a common struggle for teachers and students. So we get right into it today, and we're introduced to Hudson Dunn. And what do we learn about Hudson Dunn, David?
Well, we see that when he was a boy, the teachers called him demanding and independent.
Right. He's always been an active boy. And if you're active, that means you're just physically active, right? You're jumping, you're running up and down. You move a lot, basically.
That's right. Yeah.
Right? And so what happened? His daycare teachers called him demanding and independent. Why would they call him that, do you think, Pauline?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, in that first description, active boy, I immediately get a big smile on my face. I can just imagine, like, yeah, I think we can all think of at least one or two boys that we've known who are just filled with energy and are kind of creating chaos everywhere they go just because they've got so much boy energy just jumping out of them. And I know my brothers were always climbing on things and jumping around and accidentally breaking things.
Right.
You know, I just think of that as, like, such a joy, charming thing about childhood, and especially many boys, right?
Right.
But, unfortunately, the smile kind of disappears as you get to that next sentence where you hear daycare teachers did not see that as, like, a positive thing, right? Mm. They're seeing this as demanding and independent.
Mm.
Independent can be a positive thing, right? So maybe that doesn't carry any negative connotation. But demanding, that has a pretty negative connotation, right? So they maybe saw his need for activity and maybe not being able to sit or something as a demanding thing and not as a positive.
Right. So that was shown when he was in preschool to the action that he showed would be he preferred singing. So he loved to sing, perhaps out loud, you know, during the class time. And he was daydreaming compared to learning his ABCs. And, you know, as a teacher, I think, you know, often I've met students, you know, they would prefer to look out the window and daydream rather than concentrate on their studies. Right?
You know, now that I think about it, I was trying to think why they've used the word demanding. Mm. But I think it's not so much that he was demanding something from them. Like, usually you think about somebody who's demanding, saying, like, I need this, give me this. That's what I think of as demanding. But I think this is being used in a different sense, a demand. It means it demanded a lot of their energy.
Right.
He was a demanding student in the sense that it takes a lot more energy from the teacher to deal with a student who's got all of these kind of crazy, joyful outbursts happening in the middle of class, right?
So
that can be exhausting or demanding for a teacher.
Yeah,
for sure.
And teachers, you're trying to have good classroom management, right? And you're trying to have a calm situation and a controlled situation. So if you have a student that sporadically is just singing in the middle of your class, it can be a disruption, right? And so that can make it difficult to have a calm environment for all your students. But what happened by the time he was in kindergarten, David?
Well, he often came home crying. Mm-hmm. And I'm guessing that's because, you know, for other kids, they see him as the odd one out. Mm-hmm. And that leads to sometimes even bullying.
Mm-hmm. That's a really good point.
Yeah. So we go on to see from his mother that it created an environment in the classroom, like you were just saying, David, where he was labeled a bad kid, right? And I think that's often what happens when somebody exhibits a behavior that is not the norm, you know, not considered the norm in an environment. Then it's like, oh, you're difficult, you're unusual, you know, please go away, you know. But, of course, that hurts that person's feelings, and of course he's coming home and he's crying a lot. So what did they find out about Hudson, Pauline?
So it says Hudson has attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, or as we said earlier, ADHD for short. And this is actually quite common in the United States, at least. I know that it gets diagnosed a lot and is common in classrooms, but that doesn't mean that it's fully understood or embraced in the classrooms, right? So, and especially for young kids, it can still be a source of stigma by other children who don't understand.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of work to be done on understanding this.
That's right. And we see here that in America, there's the Centers for Disease Control. So I figured this department, they look at the statistics or they collect statistics about different diseases throughout the country. But they estimate that 11% of American kids have ADHD. Now here, the age range is from 4 to 17 years old, and this accounts for about 6.4 million children.
So 11%, that would mean 1 out of every 11 kids, is that right?
1 out of every 10 or...
About 10 or 11 kids in a classroom. So if you think about a classroom, I know most classrooms, at least that I can think of, usually are about 15 to 20, if not a little more. You're going to probably, statistically in the States anyways, have at least one, if not two kids who have ADHD in your classroom.
Which, if you think about it, you know, just can bring quite a disruption, right, to the classroom. Mm-hmm.
So, but it also reminds you just how many classrooms are dealing with that.
Exactly, and how common it actually is, right? Well, let's learn a little bit more in our next paragraph called A Recipe for Trouble.
A recipe for trouble. The list of symptoms for kids who have ADHD reads like a recipe for problems in school. Trouble paying attention and completing tasks. Being fidgety, talkative, and impulsive. Difficulty following rules, making friends, and keeping track of things, like homework or class materials. Increasing academic demands have only made it harder for kids with ADHD. Argues Dr. Jeffrey Brosco, professor of clinical pediatrics at the University of Miami Miller School of Medicine. With kids spending more time preparing for standardized tests and less time playing at recess, Brosco says the rate of ADHD in children has doubled since the 1970s.
Well, listeners, thanks for joining us as we explore the attention deficit hyperactivity disorder in the classroom today for our education article. And we begin this paragraph with an idiom, and the idiom is a recipe for trouble, or we say a recipe for disaster. And what does that mean, David?
That a recipe for disaster or trouble means it's bound to fail.
Right. Very likely to become a disaster.
Yeah.
And so why would we be saying this about ADHD? Well, let's have a look at the list of symptoms that children with ADHD have. Pauline, what does it say?
I have to say, I love the visual of a recipe because in a recipe, you put all these ingredients together and it becomes something else, right? You take eggs and flour and sugar and pretty soon it becomes a cake. Mm-hmm. All right. So now here we have a recipe for trouble in the classroom. So the ingredients of that are trouble paying attention, trouble completing tasks, being fidgety, that means always moving, not being able to stay still, talkative and impulsive, difficulty following rules, difficulty making friends, having a hard time keeping track of things, so remembering and focusing on things like homework or class materials. It's just this long list. I can just imagine throwing all these things in a bowl. That's just all of the things that are like unwanted and difficult qualities to have for a regular classroom. And unfortunately, for many kids with ADHD, all of these things are playing into their psychology and who they are as persons. That just makes it really difficult for them to succeed in a classroom.
Right. So you can see with this list that it could cause a struggle for teachers to deal with, right? Because if you have, what we say, maybe 15 to 20 students in your class, and of course two of them would be dealing with this quite consistently, then they're going to need a lot of attention from the teacher to help them with this. And so we can see where for the teacher they might feel very divided in their, you know, trying to keep attention on these students as well as the whole class in general. And we see in this next paragraph that something else doesn't help with the mix of that. What does it say in our next paragraph?
Well, it says that the schools are increasing demands on academics, and this is not helping at all.
Right, and we learned this from Dr. Jeffrey Brosco, right? He is from the University of Miami, and he has studied this.
Yeah, and you know, it says it makes it harder for the kids, but honestly, it also makes it harder for the teachers, right? Because there's a lot of pressure on them. It says in the next line that, you know, kids are spending all these times preparing for standardized tests, so these often national or statewide testing that is going to not only judge how the kids are doing, but a lot of teachers are judged on how good of a teacher they are based on these tests, and feels like their job might be on the line. So there's all of this pressure coming from all different sides that's making it hard both on the teacher and on the student to try and have an environment that really works for everyone and promotes good, healthy education.
Right. So, and it's really interesting that since the introduction of an increasing academic demand, there has also been an increase in the rate of children with ADHD. In fact, Brosco goes on to say that the rate of ADHD in children has doubled since the 1970s. We don't know if there's a parallel between the two, the increase of academic demand on the rate of ADHD being diagnosed within the classroom. I'm sure more studies will be done on that in the future. But we do see that it's not a good mix. This is not good, right? And like you said, this is bringing a lot of demands on teachers as well.
I think that we're talking about in America, right? But in Asia, where standardized tests are even stricter and more enforced on in school, ADHD might be even worse, because it says here that it doubled since 1970. So I don't know, maybe in Asia it might be like more than that.
Right. For yourself, you were educated in the Asian education system?
Yes, I was.
Okay. Did you have contact with anybody in your class that had ADHD? Well, not that you are aware of or aware of?
Actually, I just remembered when I later went into the American system, when I went to college, I had one student, and the teacher was very kind enough. Whenever we had tests, he would let the student go into an empty room to write her test, and she couldn't take all the time she needed. So that was pretty good for the teacher.
Right, so there was a lot of grace given for that. Okay, good. So the teacher adjusted to that situation. Pauline, I think it's interesting what you said before about the demands on teachers for the standardized test. So to actually have a student with ADHD in your class might be seen as a drawback, right, if you're trying to achieve these goals as a teacher.
Right, and that's hard because I think most teachers are very caring, compassionate people. That, at least in the United States, the pay is not great for being a teacher, so most people do not go into teaching for the pay. They really go in because they care about students and want to help them better. But with all the different pressures going on, it can start to, we say, pitch somebody against something. That means to suddenly make them feel like maybe this student is almost the enemy because they're getting in the way of the other students being able to learn more quickly and do well on the test, and they're probably not going to do well on the test, which then, you know, it just becomes this cycle of negativity that can start to happen because of that. And that's really too bad. I don't think that's the intent of standardized testing, and it's certainly not where teachers want to find themselves, but I do think that occurs in classrooms.
Right, and with all the schools that want to be on the rankings on the websites, like the best schools in town, stuff like that, with students of ADHD, it's going to be very tough.
They can even, we say in English, fall through the cracks, right? So maybe the teacher's not that attentive to that student, and so they start to fall behind and then, you know, don't do very well at all at school.
Or just start to really internalize that message they're being given, that they are bad students. And, you know, that's a really scary thing if a student starts to believe that at their core they're bad. You know, not that they have a struggle or that they're different, but that they're bad. And that can really turn a kid in the wrong direction if they give up on trying to be good because they believe at the core they're bad, and they just, you know, they just give into that. And I think you can see a lot of problems down the line for those kids, and ways that they will fall through the cracks if that message gets embedded in them.
Well, let's continue to learn a little bit more about this situation in our last paragraph for today.
We've increased the academic demands but we've also reduced our demands for allowing children to figure out how to spend their time, Brasco said. Young children learn best by play and by creative kinds of pursuits, and not just practice with reading, writing, and arithmetic. Dunn said the academic rigor of kindergarten definitely contributed to the difficulties her son Hudson faced in school. Whereas she remembers hatching eggs and making maple syrup in kindergarten, Dunn's son was expected to fill out worksheets and write book reports. There's very little free time for imagination. They want these kids in kindergarten sitting at a desk for 7 hours a day, she said. It creates an incredible amount of stress.
Well, listeners, welcome to our education article for the month of February. And we've been learning from Dr. Jeffrey Brasco, who is a professor of clinical pediatrics at the University of Miami, that has said that not only are there certain characteristics that make it difficult for ADHD students in the classroom, but also the increasing academic demand that is placed on them is also not helping their situation. We learn in this paragraph that we've increased the academic demands, but we've also reduced our demands for allowing children to figure out how to spend their time. So children have a lot less free time. What do you think have been the consequences of this?
Well, I think there is some possibility that this is affecting our rates of ADHD, mm-hmm. or at least rates of how quickly it's being diagnosed. Maybe it's being diagnosed too much, because kids who would have just a generation ago been considered at a normal energy level are being expected so much for them mm-hmm. that if they aren't at way on the unusual side of being able to focus for long periods of time and be quiet at a young age, then they're going to get labeled into this other side. That's one possibility,
right,
or one argument. I think there's a lot of potential negatives to this.
Right. I think it's interesting that Brasco says young children learn best by play and by creative kinds of pursuits. So very hands-on experimental play, right? And not just practice with reading, writing, and arithmetic. I know for myself growing up, you know, we finish school at 3:30 and then you go and play for a while first, and then you go and do your homework maybe after dinner for a little bit, and then you go to bed. I mean, we went to bed very early, maybe 8:30. But this, I think, I didn't realize how precious play was until I see students not being able to play as much. And I realize there's a lot of curiosity that you get to explore when you're playing. What has been your experience, David?
Well, I used to tutor this kid who was 3 years old. His parents were both doctors, so they didn't have time with him. So I had to teach him English at 3 years old. And I think of how when I was younger, when all the other students were cramming vocabularies and all that, my mom would take me and my brother out to play with sands, you know, walk around, discover new places, just play at the playground.
Right. And why is play so important for a child, Pauline?
Well, like you said, curiosity, creativity, I think just interacting with the world, I think it increases your kind of that scientific brain, you know, side that's analyzing, hypothesizing, testing. All of that's really important stuff that can grow into great careers and development as an adult, and might be getting lost in this very rigid, take in the information, write it down, memorize it, do a test, that kind of format. Not to mention, I think the language example was a great one. At 3 years old, you certainly don't need to be memorizing all of these words.
Exactly.
You know, at three, your mind is still so pliable, is still so open to language, that actually just playing in another language can be much better. I worked with a kid who was 8 years old, and I was working with him in a school setting, but we didn't have a language class. He was certainly not at this school. But I started speaking to him in Spanish during recess. I would just throw it in there, and he was amazing at picking it up. He learned more Spanish from me through that than any other class that I'd given for that age, just through play and using it in a natural way. So I think there's something to be said, especially at a young age, for the ways that they're open to receiving new knowledge and how to learn knowledge.
Well, I think it's interesting in this next paragraph, we come back to Hudson Dunn's mother, and she says the academic rigor of kindergarten definitely contributed to the difficulties her son Hudson faced in school. I'm not familiar with having too many rigors during my time in kindergarten. It was a lot of, David mentioned, playing in the sand, right? But she also remembers, as a child, remembers hatching eggs and making maple syrup in kindergarten. But now her son is expected to fill out worksheets and write book reports. What does she go on to say, David?
She said, there's little free time for imagination. And I would think so, too, because you were asking why is playing so good, and I think that's exactly why. When you play, you generate your imagination and your creativity.
Right, so we've seen a big difference between the past and what's required of students now. They say they want these kids in kindergarten sitting at a desk for 7 hours a day. That's like work.
That is crazy.
It's like my work right now. It creates an incredible amount of stress. So we're seeing that these students are being put under a lot more stress than in the past. Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today, but come back and join us tomorrow as we continue to explore ADHD in the classroom. Until tomorrow, this is Amanda,
Pauline,
David,
saying goodbye.
Goodbye.